Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to the Sunday day edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia, broadcasting to the facilities of People's Internet Radio, and being simulcast on Shake and Wake Radio. Thanks to Annie, who is a co-founder of that network with myself and her ex. And thanks for doing your work over there, Annie. We are viewer-funded station, guys, so if you like what we're doing, please hit the donate button. Much appreciated. At any time during the call, if you want to call in and add a comment or talk to one of the hosts or the guests, the phone in number is 269-409-1950, or you can get in touch with Steve at SuperBigBadMan1 on Skype, and we'll pull you into the show if you want to ask a question of Roger or people in the next hour. I'm joined by Roger Landry, who over the years I've done multiple shows. I've had the pleasure of being a friend of Roger's for, I think, getting close to 5 years of our life now, and man, I always look forward to having conversations with. Welcome to the show today, Roger, and thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I would have thought by now you probably wouldn't. You're like, okay, Roger, cat, give me a break. All right, it is enjoyable to do shows with you for the very simple reason that you're not the type of person who panics every time somebody says something that you may not have heard of or you may not subscribe to, because you're one of those people who believes that the truth needs to be told whether it hurts or not.
Yeah, we always bring a box of Kleenex when we do shows, Roger, and we hurt feelings. We're glad to give you one, guys. No problem. Well, so what's going on down there in the great United States of America, Roger?
Well, I think I want to open up a can of worms. We did a little bit of a discussion on this prior to going live here. I want to do something, basically a connecting the dots scenario. We have been discussing, some of us, those of us in the know, those of us who have done a massive amount of research, and Barry, you fall into that category. We have done a lot of research on what's happening to the global population. Okay? We're looking at a scenario today, all right, where we have the sickest population on the planet in history. Now, stop and consider what I just said. We have the most advanced medical technology in history. And most first world nations spend more money on healthcare each year than third world nations as their entire GDP. So if you stop to consider what I just said, you should by default believe that countries like America would be the healthiest countries on the planet. And the only way that wouldn't be true is if something nefarious was going on and the United States of America was in the bullseye of whatever nefarious issue we're discussing. Okay. Does that sound about right, Barry, up to this point?
Oh, yeah.
So now we're going to pull a cork on this, all right? America today, and most of you who listen to me rant have heard what I'm about to say, because I say it over and over again, because it's a scenario that needs to be burned into your freaking brain. Today, the United States, and our pals right above us, the Canadians, but the United States is the sickest nation on the planet. You all heard me say we spend about 10 times more than our closest rival on healthcare. Yet we have the highest levels of dementia, the highest levels of autism, the highest levels of Alzheimer's disease, the highest levels of ADHD, the highest levels of cognitive dysfunctions in just about any fashion, immune dysfunction, of which there are literally, I don't know, enough of them listed as long as your arm, diabetes, food allergies, and cancers, and I could go on and on. This is the United States. We spend almost 10 times more than our closest rival on healthcare. We spend the most on the planet. We have the highest levels of technology, and we have the most chronically ill society on the planet today, with better than 54% of all children today having at least one chronic illness, and a lot of them, a majority of those I just stated, suffering from multiple chronic illnesses. We are the sickest society on the planet. Is it shocking?
It's beyond shocking, Roger. And
why?
Well, of course, I mean, medical science is at the pinnacle of its success when, and the big pharma industry is at the pinnacle of its success when everybody in society is sick. And it doesn't matter who you talk to. What you just said is very, very accurate. It doesn't matter who you talk to now. I talk to people all the time, and they seem to be having child problems left, right, and center. Well, it's not a coincidence, and it's all choreographed. We know that. Go ahead.
Well, if you stop to consider something that far too many people have heard but have totally ignored, but is the absolute linchpin of what you're discussing, okay? All of these children are sick, and that's when Big Pharma is heralding its best success. It is never profitable to cure a disease. It is only profitable to control the symptoms. If I can keep you living a semi-normal life for the next 30 to 40 years, but I know that your insurance is going to spend $1,200 a month on medication so that you can feel that way,
mm-hmm.
I've succeeded. And I've also brought you into the program. Hey, look, I was feeling like crap. Now I'm taking these pharmaceutical drugs and I actually feel better. I don't really feel normal, but it's a whole lot better than I felt. So I'm willing to accept this. And this is the scenario. Again, why? We're talking about autism. One in 40 children in the United States today has autism, and that's a freaking lie. It was one in 50 female children and one in 28 male children about 4 to 5 years ago. If you do the average, that's about one in 40. Only thing is, it took them 4 years to tell us that. What's the actual number today? Mm. And then there's this. Okay, and anybody who doesn't believe me, this is all in the last article I published. Okay, so you can go to the Liberty Beacon, look up Roger Landry, and look at the last article I published on health, all right? And you will understand not only are 54% all of our children today, okay, with chronic disease, some of them with multiple, but at the same time, we are looking at the first generation born that will have a shorter lifespan than their parents. This is not me making this up. This is actual scientific researchers making this as a blatant statement of fact. Mm. So more than half of us are sick. One in 40, they're saying, have autism. I believe it's actually closer to one in 25. And there's a huge panic button because MIT, one of the biggest, most accoladed colleges on the planet, is stating that by 2025, it is very likely that one out of every two children born in the United States will have autism. Did you hear what I just said? You're looking at the end of the American society when half of the population is absolutely stymied for life and needs care. It has to come from the other half of the population. Where's your productivity? Where's the advancement of your society? Every person in this country will be required, or damn close to it, a huge portion of it, just to take care of the 50% of the population that will need care for life. Listen, I'm going to say this again. MIT researchers have blatantly stated this, and they did it in 2014. That's when this came out, okay? In 2014, stated by 2025, one in two children born will be born with autism. Now, let's start putting the dots together, Barry, okay? Any questions before I trip the life onto the next one?
No, Roger, you know, I mean, what you're talking about, you know, of course, you're preaching to the choir when you're talking to me, but a lot of people haven't heard these stats before, and I think it's really important that they get a good gist of what we're talking about here.
I agree.
The autism rates, yeah, I've really looked into that, and it seems to be hard to get real, real hardcore information. Seems to be a quash going on. Of course, we know there is, about real hardcore facts on the actual numbers. I would like to see a study done for 2017 and release those numbers to the public. What are we going to do about it, Roger, what we can do? We can educate people now, and maybe we can stem this.
Okay. We need right now to discuss a plan that is not annual. It's not biannual. It's not done every decade. It's not generational. It's not even done over the course of a century. We're talking about a plan that is anywhere between 250 and 300 years old. And that is the total subjugation of and control of the entire population of the planet. Now, again, there's a lot of people out there that are going to think, oh, this guy's just, he's crazy. What did he smoke before he came on the show? Talk to me after the show. I'll tell you about that. But anyway, the whole thing here, the whole thing here, no, there isn't. The whole thing here is we have what some call the Illuminati, there's so many different names for this, the elitist caste, so on and so forth. Is it real? Yes, it is. How real is it? Okay. We can understand that you have a huge amount of technology and a huge amount of facilitation via governments, okay, owned by these people. But what you don't have is a massive population. On the other side of the coin, you have 7.5 billion people, of which quite a few of them are starting to wake up. Okay. The only way to stop 7.5 billion people is to come at them in a fashion that does not announce what you're doing. It cannot announce what you're doing, because the easiest way to quell evil rulers in the past was to grab your pitchfork and your torch and go take the government over. Okay. And they know that with 7.5 billion people, if uprisings start across the planet, gee, look at the news. Oh, what's happening in Italy? Oh, what's happening in Germany? Oh, what's happening in France? Oh, what's happening? And I could go on and on. When these 7.5 billion peons decide to rise up, they know they're in trouble. So they need to wage a war, but it has to be a war that is waged in a fashion that we accept. It has to be a guerrilla war. What am I talking about? I'm talking about GMOs. I'm talking about GMOs, genetically modified organisms that I can prove unequivocally that are changing our DNA structure, damaging it forever. Not only that, but the government paid to develop a gene called, I'm drawing a blank here, epicyte, and it was put in corn. It only had one function, that gene, that GMO, and that was whoever ate that corn, whatever male ate that corn, became sterile. Hmm. Now, that gene could be spliced into anything, asparagus, green beans, it doesn't freaking matter. The proven fact, the test results, the government paid for the Epsite company to develop and prove this gene. And now you can't even find out if it's still in use, or if it's in use, who's using it. So that's GMOs. That's one. Okay. Let's go to vaccines. I can tell you right now, without going into any statistics about the bad stuff like mercury or thimerosal, which is the mercury, or aluminum, which is adjuvant. But without any of that, let's just talk about statistics when we talk about vaccines. We've already told you about GMOs. Okay. Oh, one more fact about GMOs. There are over 1,000 scientists already who have signed a petition globally stating that if we don't stop the great GMO experiment now, it's either approaching the point or we have already passed the point of no return, where the biosphere will be affected to the point of collapse. Mm-hmm. These are 800 to 1,000 global, renowned researchers saying this. All right. So now we're on the vaccine issue. Okay. Let's just talk statistics. The government states, all right, that 30,000 adverse vaccine reports are made each year. And I'm giving you an average. Some years it's 31,000, some years it's 32, some years 20, but right around 30,000. Okay. Then they also stated in a different place on the same website that the reports on these type of adverse reactions may be only 1 to 10% of the actual harmful cases of vaccine reaction, because people, even doctors, this is the CDC saying this, may not be aware enough to associate the symptoms to the vaccine. All right. So I just told you 30,000 every year, maybe only 1%. That's 3 million adverse cases a year, of which a significant portion are either crippled for life or death. Mm. Now, that's 1 year. Let's take 100 years of vaccine proliferation since right after World War I and the Spanish flu. Okay. That's when this all started. Globally, if there's 3 million a year in the United States, and we've been doing this for 100 years, that's 300 million people in the United States alone. Let's take that same and stretch it across the entire world.
Hey, Barry.
It is.
Yes, hang on, Steve. Just wait, let him finish his thought here. Go ahead, Roger. Finish your statement.
It may very well be that vaccines are responsible for more death and suffering on this planet than any mechanism ever developed by mankind. Mm. And that's not an exaggeration. That's using the CDC's own statistics.
Mm. Steve, you wanted to say something?
Yes, there's a question in the chat for you.
Fire away.
Well, they would like a link for that, what you just mentioned.
They would like what?
A link for the no GMO. Well,
I'm not at a computer. I'm doing a show. So I can get this to Barry, and Barry can, you know, just ask whoever it is to give it Barry away to get the link to them.
And, yeah, I can do that after the show. No problem. Or during the show. No problem.
And all they have to do, all anybody has to do, if they don't want to wait for that, I believe it's EPESITE or EPISITE, Epsite. Epsite, type that in, GMO, Epsite gene. Put that in a search engine. You're going to come up with plenty of information. Believe me, you are.
Okay.
All right. So now we've got the vaccines. We've got the GMOs. Okay. Now let's go over to, I don't know, geoengineering. One of the biggest components falling from the sky, because they say they use it to reflect sunlight and cool the planet, okay, is nano-sized particles of aluminum. Are there a lot of other things in what's discharged from these planes that is harmful to humanity and our physiology? Yes. What's the biggest component? Okay, I believe at this point, not too many people would argue with me, that is nano-sized particles of aluminum. Aluminum is extremely toxic to the human physiology, especially to the nervous system and the brain. Yet if you look up and you see that they sprayed the sky so many times that all the lines have merged into a putrid gray, just, I don't know, bowl over your sky. And all of that stuff coming down, I don't care if it's nano size or not, if it's in a gravity well, eventually it must settle to the ground. You are breathing this.
Mm.
All right, let's go one more, and then we're going to start tying them together. Let's go to pharmaceuticals, okay? Pharmaceutical drugs, we pretty much have touched on this several times. It has never been profitable for a large pharmaceutical company with a popular drug to ever come up with a cure for what they're treating. Okay, the cure is not profitable, but alleviating somebody's symptoms with drugs every single day or every single week for the rest of their life puts them back in play, sort of convinces them you know what you're doing, and keeps change coming into your pocket. Why do you think cancer in the United States has the worst cure rate of backward countries, even like Mexico? Okay, if you want to try what's working in Mexico or what's working in Portugal, in the United States, you can't. It's illegal. You either need to have a cut, slash, or burn. Right? They're either going to give you chemotherapy, they're going to give you an operation, or, you know, it's just so corrupt, it's insane. So now we've covered that. Now, how do all of these things work together to – basically, we're talking about population reduction in Agenda 2030. How do all of these things work in that fashion? To start off with, a lot of you out there are going to say, yeah, you're breathing that aluminum in, but you got what's called a blood-brain barrier, and that keeps a lot of that poison aluminum out of your brain, if not all of it. So it's really not affecting your cognitive ability that much. Oh, ye of little faith, I wouldn't have spent all the time and all of the energy saying what I've said if I didn't want to throw fluoride in your face. Why do you think it is so hard for municipalities across this country to get the fluoride out of their water? Even though it is a proven fact that it lowers IQ, even though it's a proven fact that it promotes cancer in the body, but here's the big kicker that not too many people are going to tell you, and I will never challenge you to prove me wrong. I dare you to prove me wrong. If you drink fluoridated water, okay, the fluoride in that water, and even a lot of your bottled water, it's the law in this country. The law says they don't have to tell you if there's fluoride in your bottled water, but I can tell you a lot of the bottled water you drink to avoid that, it's in there. Mm-hmm. But what does fluoride do? Why all this big crap about fluoride? Fluoride, once you consume it, opens the barrier to the brain. The blood-brain barrier is taken down by fluoride, allowing the mercury from the vaccines, the aluminum from the vaccines, the aluminum from the air you're breathing, And I could go on. The glyphosate that covers your food, that's supposedly the second biggest reason for autism in this country is glyphosate or Roundup. So if you take all of this, now the vaccines, the fluoride is going to make sure they really, really hit my brain. Okay. I would dare anybody to check the research I'm about to mention on the dementia brains that were sliced up and analyzed for what's in the brain of a person with dementia and Alzheimer after they die. I want to bet that the answer is, and I already know this, but I'll bet anyway, that the answer is aluminum. A lot of it.
Aluminum. We could always make tinfoil.
And as we go, so I'm going to tell you that we're at war. We are at war with those who call themselves the elitist caste. What is their end goal? Their end goal is, and anybody who doesn't believe this, do me a favor, go look at the freaking Georgia Guidestones or look them up. Keep the Earth's population below 500 million in tune with nature. I got to explain something to you. 7 billion of us need to go. Now, there's two ways to get rid of us. Two ways. We can have a massive war with dead bodies everywhere, radiation just cooking the planet, you know, craters, radioactive craters everywhere, and we could probably accomplish that. The only thing is, if a war of that magnitude breaks out, I would dare to tell you that there would be no place for humanity on the surface of this planet for at least 10,000 years. So what's the other option? What's the other option, the one that's not going to rile us all up with our pitchforks and our torches or storming the Bastille? What can they do? If you fight a war and you're an intelligent individual, okay, do you go with a pistol? Or do you go with a pistol, a rifle, a machine gun, a tank, a fighter jet, a bomber, an aircraft carrier? In other words, you go with multiple weapons, each and every one of them tuned for a specific thing, but all put together, they are meant to accomplish one task. You win, they lose. This is it. Okay, so what are their weapons? Let's start off with a statistic that I still can't beat, and I wish I could. And if anybody out there can give me a more up-to-date statistic, I would appreciate it beyond belief. The latest real statistic I have, not an approximation or a guess, is 2014, 4 years ago, when the U.S. government reported a 314,000 birth deficit in the United States. There are countries, first world countries all over Europe, where the Caucasian population, their natural population, not the influx of migrants, their natural population is at such a low reproductive rate right now that it could not maintain the population. There is statistics out, the United States put out, I think about 2 years ago, a report showing that the population of the United States in 2025 would be 99 million people. There's 326 million of us right now. What the hell do they know that we don't? Well, I can tell you this. Okay, if half the population has autism, these people are not going to procreate. Okay, if a huge chunk of the population has cancer, if a huge chunk of the population has, and I could go on and on, there are so many maladies that would absolutely, not only that, but infertility. Infertility is rising so fast globally, but especially in the first world. What do we have that those people in the poor world don't have? We have massive amounts of GMOs. We have massive amounts of pesticides and herbicides. We have massive amounts of vaccines, massive amounts of drugs, fluoridated water. This is what those poor people don't have. And in about 5 to 10 years, they're going to be living us down like you wouldn't believe, and they will become the dominant portion of the human race, unless, of course, they are taken out as well by some other mechanism. Now, you might ask, what is that? I have firsthand knowledge because I did an interview along with Christina England, who lives in England and was one of our partners, with Dr. Nagari in Kenya. Okay, several years ago, they sterilized almost 10 million Kenyan women by giving them what they thought was a tetanus shot to protect them. What they didn't know, and what the Kenyan doctors found, was that that was spiked. That vaccine was spiked with HCG hormone, which, what does it do? It makes women infertile. Then they came back the next year with a polio vaccine and gave it to about 2.5 million people. What does that one do? That one was spiked with a hormone that makes males infertile. So in less than 2 years, they sterilized 20 to 25% of the population of Kenya against their knowledge and against their will. And this was done by, guess who? This was done by the United Nations, all in kind of, you know, cahoots with Agenda 2030. Let's reduce population. But we're not even going to tell you we're doing it. We're going to give you GMOs. We're going to give you vaccines. We're going to give you, and I could go on. This is what's happening, Barry. Now, I want to tie all this into one more thing, and that is the fires we saw in California. All right, I spent 30 years of my life either in or working directly for the military. I'm not telling you that I'm guessing at anything I'm about to discuss. I'm telling you that with what I did, which we won't discuss, I have a trained eye and a trained brain. You don't work for the military-industrial complex for over 20 years if you're an idiot. And I can tell you that we take a look at these pictures, and there's a lot of...
What happened there? Ooh.
What happened to where what?
Happened? Huh?
What happened to where what?
Well, I don't know what happened. All of a sudden, he dropped...
No, he's still in the call. I just lost his audio.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've lost your audio if you can hear us, Roger.
Hello?
Oh, there Hello? You go. You're back.
You think somebody maybe doesn't like what I'm talking about?
I don't know, but somebody zapped your audio.
Okay, I'm talking about what happened in California. I'm talking about looking down a street where the homes are absolutely burned to a cinder and the cars are cinderized in the driveways. But if you look 20 feet away, you see trees with green leaves. If you look at the grass right in front of the house, you see it's green. If you see, let me explain something to you. If you can turn a car, okay, into basically cinders, a portion of that vehicle, a good portion of that vehicle is made out of steel, and I'm not exactly sure, but I believe the melting point is 2,700 degrees. Correct. Let me explain something to you. If a house can be burned absolutely to the ground in total ashes, and 30 feet away, there are green trees all over the place, and then there's a break, green trees, and another house, exact same thing. And then the space between those two houses, absolutely full of green trees, and then the next house is burned to the ground. Okay? No, and all vehicles are literally melted.
I'm chuckling because I looked at those videos, Roger. There's no explanation.
There is an explanation, okay? And it's something that immediately gets you called a conspiracy theorist, all right? Do I know that directed energy weapons are real? Do I know that focused laser beams are real? Do I know that in some cases, and I won't go deep into it, particle beams do exist? Yes, I do. I know this to be a fact. I know that missiles, and this is not secret or classified, have literally been knocked out of the sky by new anti-ballistic missile lasers.
Yep.
I know that planes are equipped with these lasers in the United States military forces today that they can use to knock drones and things like that out of the air where they're not supposed to be. They can literally destroy them. Okay. Now you tell me, with that capability, how tough is it to do this? How tough? It isn't. And I dare, you know, somebody came up with an answer for that. Okay. And this is what he did. He took a wet piece of wood and he took a dry piece of wood and he said the reason why some of the trees don't burn but the houses do is because they're dry. See? And he tried to light both of them. The only one that burned, is the dry wood. And to him, I would say this. If you can melt the glass on the windows on my car because the fire is so freaking hot, what wet leaf is going to survive that?
I'm charging Roger because it's insanity. Sorry, bud. let me go look that up on the computer for you, buddy, and I'll come back with an answer. We'll think of something.
So how am I connecting this to agenda, what was originally Agenda 21, control the population. Actually, their big goals were not only to get the amount of people on the planet under control, but to move the vast majority of us, like 99.5% of us, into stack and pack cities, like you see in China. Yeah. Okay, stack and pack cities, and out of the rural areas. And this is exactly what you're seeing in California. You are literally being chased out of areas that the UN has more control over than you do. And I would dare to say that if, well, I would guarantee that directed energy weapons were used in California, they were not U.S. military. They could very, very well have been UN or some other player contractor, so on and so forth. The technology is beyond you and me, but is it beyond Martin Marietta?
Mm. Yeah, when I said there, I couldn't be explained, of course, opening the door to this conversation, Roger, because, you know, my knowledge of directed energy isn't as wide as yours, but I've looked into it enough to understand that all we have to really understand is that the government has technology that's way ahead of what we know about. And that's really all we got to know, because to say that this happened and directed energy wasn't used, I've looked at hundreds of videos of anomalies that cannot be explained. They just cannot be explained. Just like the falling of the towers on 9/11, that cannot be explained. I believe there was a directed energy weapon used in that situation, primitive stages. I mean, there's just too much there to say that that wasn't directed. The amount of explosive force that was used to blow those towers apart is just mind-boggling. And to say that that was all planted, that would be a tough pill to swallow. I've listened to Dr. Woods talk on that a lot, and I believe that was directed energy as well. Go ahead. What do you think on that? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I not only agree with you, but for anybody who wants to do a little research, I'm talking about Paradise City in California, okay?
Yep.
There are YouTube videos on that. There are images on that. There are articles on that. Please go look. And then if you've got a better explanation than mine, and I'm telling you, to me, that is a guaranteed directed energy footprint. If you've got a better, and don't come back and tell me it's because the leaves were wet on the trees, because that ain't going to hack it, okay? But if you've got a better explanation, please tell me. Because
it's a coincidence. All these fires almost started at the same time, Roger. You know, it's like, okay, turn on the beams.
Not only that, but there are certain, and I won't go any deeper into that because we've got other things to discuss. There are certain specific reasons why Paradise was taken out. And the exact portions of Paradise were taken out. But we're not going to go into that here because we're not done with this story. This story all started with connecting the dots. So how the hell does using freaking directed energy weapons on Paradise, California, how does that – and let's just think about the mental stigma of that. Paradise was just destroyed by fire. Just let that go through your head a couple of times. And if you think the people who pull this crap on us don't think these things, of course they do. What does it sound like? Paradise just burned to the ground. All right. But anyway, so how does this work? Why am I throwing in directed energy weapons and Agenda 2030 into this? Okay. I'm going to tell you right now, one of the biggest drawbacks to GMOs is they're sterilizing us. Look up the Epside gene again. Okay. Please look that up. Please. You don't need me. All you have to do is type in GMOs, Epicyte gene. That's it. You'll get more information than you know what to do with on that. All right. So infertility, GMOs, infertility vaccines. That's a proven fact, not a guess. That's a proven fact. Okay. Infertility from, yes, too much fluoride. Okay. Infertility from, and I could go on. Aluminum is an absolute destroyer of brains. Infant children, especially when they're just born or still in their mother's womb as a fetus, they either share their mother's bloodstream, or when they're first born, they have no blood to brain barrier, none. So you have to be careful what you feed an infant so it doesn't leach into their brain at the point where the brain is still developing and cause irreparable damage for life. Autism, ADHD, ADD, okay? So you have to be sure you keep things like mercury and aluminum vaccines away from these children with no blood-brain barrier. If you're a poor mother, and a lot of women, millions of them qualify for what I'm about to say, and you go and get WIC formula for your child, WIC formula, which means the government pays for it, and I have no problem with that. I really do think our children need to be taken care of. There are only certain brands that WIC will approve for you to buy. And all of those brands contain aluminum as an anti-clumping agent. Now, the more expensive top-of-the-line brands, like some rich bee mother might want to buy, whatever, because it's got a brand name, they don't use aluminum. Just the cheap ones that the government will allow you to buy for your infant. Aluminum at that point in a child's life is an absolute crime. It's an absolute crime. So now we've got all of these things. I just got done explaining to everybody, you don't go into the war with just a pistol. But we are all subject in the United States, and everything I'm about to mention, we're the number one dog. We all suffer GMOs in the United States at a higher level than any other country. We all suffer vaccines in the United States at a higher level than any other country. We all suffer pharmaceutical drugs in this country. Here's another statistic, people. Again, a fact, not a guess. We have less than 5% of the global population, and the American population takes 60% of all of the psychotropic or psychiatric drugs prescribed on the planet. And a big chunk of those go to our children, some of them still in grade school, like 20 million children.
So, say that again. Which that's part? Shocking. Yeah, I didn't know the number that was 60%. Okay, just a 5%.
5%
of the world population. The
world's population taking over 60% of the psychotropic and psychiatric drugs on the planet. Again, not a joke. I don't challenge you to prove me wrong. I dare you to prove me wrong. Now, I just got done telling you we're number one when it comes to the drugs, number one when it comes to the fluoride, number one when it comes to the vaccines, number one when it comes to the GMOs, number one when it comes to the glyphosate, the poison that we're all eating because of GMOs. We're number one on all of these. Now, I started this whole conversation off by saying the United States was in the crosshairs. I'm going to explain something to you. If we don't get off our dead asses right now and do something, and I'm talking to my Canadian friends up north because a vast majority of this applies to you just as much, okay? If we don't get off our dead asses real soon by 2025 or 2030, 99 million people in this country, unless they let a whole lot of people across the southern border in a big open heart deal, you are going to see the population of the United States fall off a freaking cliff. We are being culled. Nobody is shooting us. Nobody is dragging our children, kicking and screaming into meat grinders. Nobody is doing any of this. As a matter of fact, it's all being sold to us in the most beneficial fashion you could possibly imagine. The GMOs are there to expand crops, to get bigger yields, to make them, I don't know, immune from all of the weeds around them, except what actually happened is GMOs don't have a bigger yield. All of the herbicides we are using have turned the weeds into super weeds. So now they have to use 300 and 400% more of this killer shit that you and I eat just to keep the weeds off. And the bugs from the pesticides, they've turned into what we call, Google this people, super bugs. They're 5 times worse than they used to be before we exposed them to the poisonous crap. Why do you think all of these researchers are saying the ecosystem is about to collapse from GMOs? Now, all of this stuff, put it together, Barry, all of it, put it together. Why is the United States the most chronically ill and has the biggest infertility issue on the planet? Wouldn't you be if every one of these weapons was aimed at the world, but you were the target?
I couldn't agree with you more, Roger. And talking about superbugs, of course, these bugs are mutating like anything else that's exposed to chemicals. They're mutating, and I read a report on that about 3 weeks ago, and it's absolutely shocking, the disappearance of natural bugs on our planet. It's just like any other aspect of our planet right now. We're seeing a mass die-off. We're seeing the rise of red tides. We're seeing things happen in our oceans right now, unprecedented in our human history. So, you know, really, I one of the questions I ask myself a lot, Roger, is sure, I understand everything that you've talked about here in the last hour. I fully understand. And I bet a lot of our listeners are probably in tune with a lot of it, too. But, you know, the insanity of these people is that the fact is that the planet itself is going to be unable to sustain life in the future. And I honestly believe that. So where is their remedy for that? What is their plan? Are they going to go underground? What, are they going to go to Mars? Okay, are they going to go to Mars? Or are they planning on living underground for 100 years? What's their plan?
Well, the underground thing is a fact, okay? And again,
we know.
You know, there are dumbs, and those are deep underground military bases. It's not – well, it is a bunch of people underground that are dumb. But anyway, so yes, that is a possibility. But – anybody who's got a plan that's been, I don't know, in facilitation for a couple of centuries also has – they think about what ifs. So they do plan for the what ifs. There are several seed vaults, one of which is up above the frozen tundra, that contain all non-GMO plants on the planet. Wait a minute. Shades of Noah's Ark.
Okay.
And what we are looking at is, again, a population who believes that they have an inherent right to rule, to play God. These are the elites. So let's shave that back just a little bit, okay? What are they going to do? Are they going to even bat an eyelash at watching all of us die off because the ecosystem collapses? No, in about 75 or 100 years later, when green things start poking their heads back up through the ground, they can come up and start replanting things all over the place. But why are they doing this? The thing of it is, we've had a big discussion on weapons. We had a big discussion on who's doing it. But why? What's the reason behind all of this? If anything has been learned in the political, I don't know, I don't even want to call it machinations of society throughout history, because we've blown one form of government after another, one right after another. In any of these situations, okay, if you stop to consider, the best and most easily facilitated governments are authoritarian governments over limited-sized populations. Now, if you stop to consider what the Georgia Guidestone says and what I've been hollering about for the last almost freaking 50 minutes, wow, doesn't that make sense? Gee, there's too many people for us to control and have the world like we want it. These people want to be able to go to New Zealand and have the entire freaking island for themselves because they're elite, and just bring along a few of their serfs.
I got a little wrench to throw in there, Roger, because we have this thing on the planet now called nuclear isotopes. We have this thing called nuclear power. And I don't care what their plan is, this planet is going to unleash geological events in the future that are going to shake the planet. We know that. We know we're in a very high earthquake activity period right now, and that these things have happened in the past. The Earth has been shaken by 9s and 10 magnitude earthquakes. And here all over this planet, we've got these things called nuclear power plants. We see the effects of Fukushima, one major meltdown. What's going to happen to this? Now, wait a second. These elites, what are you going to have left? How many thousands of years is it going to take for the planet to come back when it is covered with the amount of nuclear radiation? Let me finish my thought. Amount of radioactivity material available right now to coat it. What life is going to survive? Is life going to be completely extinguished? How many thousands of years are they going to have to live underground? Where is the sanity? You can't kill the one thing that you want to live on to kill the people that are living on it.
Not only do I agree with you, but again, you brought up nuclear power. which I totally agree with. There's about 30 other things I didn't bring up today because I was just discussing those particular health issues, the benevolence they were using to, you know, we're doing good things for you, which in fact, behind the scenes are actually extremely evil things. But let's touch on the nuclear issue, because that would have been a whole show with you and me, because that's another really, really bad spot with me. It's not only these nuclear power plants. It is the fact that – well, the site, yes, where all of the spent rods, so to speak, go, and things like this. If you stop to consider, if there is a nuclear war and it is bad enough to cause a nuclear winter and that kills off like 99.9% of the population with the rest of it hiding underground, then what are you looking at? I'm going to tell you what you're looking at. Within a matter of a few short years, every single one of those reactors, which are unkempt and uncared for, and some of them within a matter of hours, because there'll be no electricity to run the cooling pumps, will go into meltdown. Within, I would say, at the most 12 to 18 to 24 months, the entire planet will have such a high level of radioactivity. Will stuff survive? Yeah, plants can mutate, so on and so forth. Will anything that lives and breathes and walks and talks survive? That will be physically impossible unless you are in a dome.
The question about nature, whether nature would survive, that's the one that we really don't want to be answering or even asking. But at this point, I don't think that nature would survive, because we're seeing the effects on the bottom of the ocean. We're seeing the effects on plankton. And the plankton depletion is attributed to three or four different factors, but radioactivity is a major factor there. We really got to ask ourselves as a human race, where are we going forward and where is the sanity of what we're doing? Because eventually, Roger, we're only, 60, 70 years into the proliferation of nuclear power on the planet, and now we're seeing massive problems. Boy, I'll tell you, throw some earthquakes and some big tsunamis in there and a few other things into the equation, and then start shaking this old planet, and then have a few more major fault lines let go. We're going to see these nuclear power plants going off all over the planet. We're committing suicide. If the human race doesn't wake up to that very, very soon and put a stop to it, get rid of all this, which is a monumental statement. Of course, it's monumental, but I don't see the human race surviving nuclear power. I just don't see it. Based on what I'm seeing right now and the numbers that I'm seeing and what we're seeing at this point, like I said, we're only 70 years into it, Roger, and now we're seeing so many problems everywhere, scrams every day on nuclear reporting sites, every day at these power plants. It's only a matter of time. Like I said, let's throw in a San Madre earthquake, or let's let the Cascadia go, Roger. How many nuclear power plants on the West Coast between Canada and the United States? I believe it's 9 or 10 that are operating. Are subjected to a possible 100-foot tsunami, minimum 50-foot, when this fault line lets go. That's 88 years overdue right now. We're just sitting on a ticking time bomb, guys. It's insanity. It's absolutely insanity. You can't unleash the sun on the earth, Roger, and not expect to get burned, buddy. Go ahead. I don't want to get into nuclear, because I'll go an hour with it too, Roger. I can go 3 hours on nuclear, trying to get through to people that everything else is irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant if we don't have life on the planet. And we are right now looking at being able to extinguish, and I defy somebody to prove me wrong on this, that we're looking at the possibility of extinguishing all life on the planet. Well, what kind of legacy is that, guys? What is
the amount of radiation still pouring out of Fukushima on a daily basis, the entire Northern Pacific region is just about dead. And what they are catching in there is so mutated, it doesn't even look like what God intended it to look like.
Absolutely.
This is what we are seeing. And again, these are three reactors in one plant in one area that got hit by a tidal wave. Yes. As my good friend has just explained, the West Coast is a disaster waiting to happen, but that's not all. The East Coast is a disaster waiting to happen. France is a disaster. England is a disaster. Parts of Russia are a disaster that are much more technologically active than we are. At the same time, we still have to go back to the elitists believe this, okay? 1% of us are useful. The rest of us are in the way and making life harder and causing disasters and making mistakes. We are not good enough to walk in their freaking shadow. So it doesn't matter how dangerous the reactors are. They know what you know. They know what I know. And they probably agree with us. And they probably figure there's too many idiots out there, too many grass eaters, too many, I don't know, cattle, sheeple out there that we can't control. This has been the intent for the last 100 years, is to knock the population of the planet down to a point where it can be controlled from a central region. Gee, go figure.
Well, I think they're going to shoot themselves. I think we're all shooting ourselves. It doesn't matter where you live on this planet or what area you breathe. I think we're all shooting ourselves in the foot if we don't wake up to the threat of nuclear power to the future of life on this planet. And that, to me, supersedes most of the things I think about and talk about now, Roger, because really, political nations will rise and nations will fall, and political parties will rise. And sure, we're going to go through all this political stuff and this kind of stuff. It always happens. It's gone on through history. But now we're looking at the potential of wiping out all mechanisms of life on the planet. And that's a scary thought, my friend.
That may happen anytime over the next 100 years.
Yeah, or could it happen even sooner, Roger?
It may, but what I just stated is there are MIT researchers stating flat out that by 2025, okay, you need to, that's only 6 years from now, okay? Yep. As many as 50% of our population born will have autism. Okay, yeah. You're looking at within the next 10 to 20 years. There may never be, okay, there may be, but there may never be a major global catastrophic radiation release. There may be some radiation releases, but they're probably going to be localized. But I will guarantee you, if we don't do something about the GMOs, the vaccines, and the fluoride and these things, we won't be around in 20 years, or our children will be in a country that is much, much less populated. That's a fact.
Well, lots of scary scenarios out there, isn't there, Roger? And you might be right. Maybe we won't see a nuclear release, but we could see one tomorrow.
Yes, we could.
I talk about the Cascadia fault line and the subduction zone, guys.
I agree with you.
And that one there is right now, it is probably the most, one of the biggest threats to the world, not just to the West Coast of the United States and Canada, but to the whole world, because the power in that one is going to be released is absolutely going to shake cities like Seattle, Portland, Vancouver right to the ground. So,
and there's one more thing it could do that a lot of people aren't considering, and only one researcher I know has discussed this. If that thing releases with a big pop, it could be the trigger that sets Yellowstone off.
It could be, Roger. And you know what? The underwater pictures they've taken of the two plates where they come together, where the Juan de Fuca meets the Cascadia, where those plates are coming together. In 1991, they sent a submersible down. The rise in land between the two points was 8 feet. It is now 97 feet of land up push from the bottom of the ocean. So when these two plates coming together and they're not moving, so it's forcing the land up. But when this one lets go, every day it doesn't let go, there's more pressure building. Estimates put it at a 9.2, Roger, and a minimum 50-foot tsunami, and it's 88 years overdue, and they have timed it almost to the year for 10,000 years. Every 200 years, 210 years, this sucker lets go. It's been 298 now.
Watch your time, Barry.
My time's up, guys. We're down to the last 3 minutes, Roger. I could go 3 hours with you, buddy. Right, no problem. But unfortunately, we only got the hour, and I got the next hour. I'm going to have some Canadians in, and we're going to talk about the insanity of the United Nations Mass Immigration Pact and a few other things going on in our country. You're welcome to stick around, Roger, if you want.
I will be listening, but I have another commitment. But I'll be listening.
Okay, real quickly, plug your show real quick. We got about a minute left here, and I got to take a break.
Okay, it's the Liberty Beacon Project. The flagship website is the Liberty Beacon. I do a show on Thursdays at noon central called The Town Crier. Gee, imagine that. And you can't do better than listening to Mr. Barry, because he has the pieces to the big puzzle.
Well, hey, Roger, always a pleasure having you in, and thanks for the kind words, and I look forward to having you in again in the near future.
Okay.
Great talk. Okay, guys, we're going to take a break for a couple minutes. I'm going to go relieve my body because I've been drinking coffee. And we'll be back in about 3, 4, 5 minutes, something like that. Whatever. Hey, well, welcome back to the second hour here, guys. We're going to have a few people hopefully join me in this hour. We're going to talk a little bit about insanity going on in Canada and a few things going on in our Canadian government that's got the country screaming at the top of their lungs. I'm joined by Gary, Gary Gilbert. I almost didn't have your last name there, Gary. They're putting together an organization called Synthesis Canada. It's going to be a new media operation. I don't know how else to describe it right this particular moment. That's coming forward on the internet, very similar to Facebook. And I'm going to let Gary explain a little bit about that in the next few minutes. And hopefully Mark Dixon's going to join me here. He wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on in South Africa right now that's not getting the attention that it should get. So hopefully Mark's here with me in a few minutes. But Gary, welcome to the show. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Hey, Barry. How are you? How's the day?
Well, I haven't eaten a cookie, so everything's good.
Got to have goals. That can come.
talking on the radio. Don't worry about it.
You know, it's funny because whenever anybody asks me what Synthesis Social is, I always find it really hard to kind of give a what I can feel like is an adequate reply. It's just so hard to kind of put into words. Is it a new media? Yeah, it is intended to be a new media platform, a new media broadcasting. Is it a social media platform? Absolutely. Is it a networking community? 100%. Mm-hmm. It's the whole thing came out of some very serious issues that we face all over the West today, specifically in Canada. And it was more a response of helplessness than anything else. You know, we didn't start this direction to build a business or to get into the IT world or to do all this other stuff. It was more almost an act of rebellion against the current flavor and climate within the political scene. You know, I'm a big believer of freedom. Mm-hmm. And in fact, very, very extreme ardent supporter of freedom in the fact that I believe that you have the right to choose regardless. Even if it's wrong, you have that right. You know, mm-hmm. We have all these laws to restrict everybody from doing things, like every last thing is legislated. And there was this thing that we've overlooked, that we are humans. And part of being human is mean we're going to make mistakes, you know. So out of one breath, we're told all our life it's okay to make mistakes. And then in the other, we're told you do that, it's criminalized, it's legislated, and it's wrong. And it's this hypocrisy that really creates the environment we see today. And it's horrific. So this really largely came out of that.
Right. I kind of see it, you know, really, Gary, I got to know you a little bit here in the last month or so, last 6 weeks when we had conversations. And really it comes down to, I think it's more of a moral obligation that you feel to provide a platform, because you see the problems coming forward with the freedom of speech in Canada and the attack on freedom of speech and how we're being censored, what exactly Facebook is doing. And here you are, you know, coming up with a platform to really take a stand against that. And I say kudos to you. I really kind of look at what you're doing. You know, it is unfortunately going to be a Canadian-only website, correct?
Well, yes and no. We're using geographical-centric platforms. So our Canadian platform will be for Canadians to discuss Canadian issues, to engage with other Canadians. You know, for somebody like yourself who's trying to talk about Canada issues, you need to talk to Canadians. You know, some guy in Zimbabwe isn't going to make a difference. He has no dog in the fight. So right. It's important that you actually get heard by those that the message is for. We have an American platform. It's actually up now as well. We have the UK platform going live soon as well. Basically, the whole thing is that each country, each area within the West, which is what's being affected right now by these issues, because the same issues we face in Canada are happening. We see it in France. We see it in the UK. We see it in Germany. We see it all over the West. And those will all be tied together on a global platform. So you'll have the option to interact with your country on Canadian issues and then go and talk with others that you might have friendships with or relationships with in other countries that have the same issues and kind of compare notes and compare solutions. You know, you said it was a moral obligation. It absolutely is. It wasn't. It's It's the fact that it was a problem that was identified and nobody was doing anything about it. So somebody had to do it. And cool. I think I've said this to you before. If not us, then who? And if not now, then when?
Yeah, you know, now's the time.
We've been waiting. Now, nothing's happening.
And now is the time. Hey, by the way, anybody who wants to call in and join in the show, you can call 269-409-1950. That's a call-in line. Or you can send a Skype request to Steve, my producer, at SuperBigBadMan1, and Steve will accept it. You can join the call.
I love that name. I love that
Super name. Big Bad Man. Yeah, where'd you come up with that one, Steve?
It was a joke.
It's a good name. Yeah, I like it too.
It definitely helps with trying to talk on Skype.
Excuse me.
Using his name, there's a thousand of them out there, but using that name, it's easy to find them. It made it so simple.
Well, I tell you, a lot of people are really starting to pay attention to what you're doing there, Gary, and I say kudos to you guys. I really do. And, I've got my support, and I've already been talking to Jurgen here a couple of times. I actually talked to him again this week, and we're gung-ho to do a formal show on that network.
I look forward to that. I do have some bad news, though.
What's the bad news? What's the bad news?
Well,
bad news.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the pros about the site, for instance, the non-advertising and the non-information selling and things like that, does pose problems, you know. So far, it's been me doing this, and I'm not limitless, you know what I mean? There's much better suited people to be doing this kind of thing than I am. And economically, this site is going to take support, you know. And there's some things that come down the pike that are going to need people's support. If you want that free platform of free speech, you know, freedom isn't free today. We're in a world and a society where everything costs money. We have to get more servers and things of that nature. We have to have more coders to build plugins. You know, these are all things that take money. And
well, I've got a couple ideas for that we can talk about, Gary.
Sure.
But we won't talk about them on the radio show here, but they're you know, I mean, any well, kind of any kind me. Of situation.
I'm blunt and upfront. I don't want any misgivings with folks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. We'll have a chat about that. I mean, there is ways to raise money that are. I mean, totally above the board. I mean, we're talking about giving people a platform that's completely independent from Facebook and has security measures in place. Can't be controlled by corporations. And freedom of speech, like you said, is getting to be an expensive thing in this country.
And we're running out of time.
We are.
This migration compact.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. I mean, why? You know, I'm not in a big city, unfortunately. I'm isolated up here in northern British Columbia. But if I'd have been in any one of these locations yesterday where there's rallies going on, I know I would have been there. And I'm kind of surprised, you know, given the impact of this immigration pact that our immigration minister is about to sign us on to, the depths of it and the actual implications for Canada is being very, very well hidden from the general Canadian population.
Absolutely.
Because if people really knew the impact of this pact that Justin Trudeau and his globalist puppets want to sign us on to, there would be tens of thousands of people out at these rallies. I think it's going to take Canada to get to the point where France is right now, Gary.
We're
absolutely seeing an incredible pushback from the French people in France.
Yeah, but you also see the opposite side, too. I mean, I absolutely hope we don't get to that point. You know, I hope that people come together and actually...
I don't either.
But here's the thing. They just rolled out something like 120,000 police and security services to combat the Yellow Jackets in France. They wouldn't do that for anything else. You know what I mean? For all the other problems, the terrorist assaults they've had and all these other things, they didn't go to these measures. So that's got to tell people something right there, that although people are standing up against... You know, the issues in France currently, and it's funny because you see all the jokes being tossed. Oh, well, France, you know, they chicken out all the time. Yeah, they're the ones leading the way right now, you know. But the thing the whole thing, I mean, they weren't just French police. They were EU police.
Right.
You know what I mean? They weren't French military vehicles. They were EU military vehicles. And if they think that it can't happen here in Canada, I mean,
right now, Gary, and Canadians are
we're
not.
Seeing
we're
They've seeing tested it. They've tested it. The G20 in Toronto a couple years ago. You know, what did they do? They didn't do anything. They simply blocked everybody off and literally arrested everybody, even the guy that was living in the area, walked out to go to the corner store, got swooped up and thrown in jail. And it doesn't matter that he got let go later. He had to go through that process.
Just the fact, you know, Gary, that some of the unbelievable media quash on information in Canada just blows my mind, because a story as big as the Danforth shooter, not the actual shooting itself, but what was found in the residence where he was residing.
Oh, his ties, everything else.
Well, no, it's the 42 kilograms of consent. Yeah. That, now, you know, people, this should be the biggest story in Canadian history, because that's enough of that drug to kill everybody in Canada, somewhere between 10 to 50 times each. Approximately, and that's, you know, just the numbers that we can come up with based on doses produced out of that much of this found in the basement of the Danforth shooter's.
Let me tell you something about weight. Heavy, that much weight of carfentanil. You don't just get that at your local dealer. You don't just get that at the guy down the street.
That's an international connection.
That's an international government-sanctioned connection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the most toxic substances you can lay your hands on. And it's in this guy's basement. Well, what was that all going to be used for?
How do you think he got it?
Huh?
How do you think he got it?
Well, Gary, this is just the one they busted. How many more? Could there be more in Canada? Let me think.
Listen, in a town, in a city the size of Thunder Bay, it's not really a city. It's just kind of a big town. It's the northernmost city in Ontario, you know, and they're having massive carfentanil problems. You know what I mean? And then you look at bigger cities like Vancouver and Toronto and Calgary and Edmonton and Montreal. And, you know what I mean? There's not just a little bit of a problem here, folks. There is major epidemic.
Yeah. Well,
where do you think the money's going?
1,000 people died in British Columbia last year from fentanyl. Fentanyl is produced from carfentanil. I have a hard time pronouncing that word, guys.
About a decade and a half ago, maybe two decades now, I guess, the big problem in Vancouver when everybody was ODing on that ultra-pure heroin?
I know four people that died from that batch when it came into Prince Rupert.
And it was a horrific time.
4 days. 4 days, buddy, four people.
Horrific time, OD. Right?
Yeah.
And that makes this look like your cookies. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's going to be a problem. I mean, it's not going to be a problem. It is a problem that's going to get worse.
Well, really, you know, Gary, if you really want to go down the rabbit hole deep when we talk about this amount of drug being available or in Canada right now, to say that there isn't more of that in this country, you'd have to have your head in the sand. And
there's
really,
a thousand of these guys out there with those kinds of weights.
And when's the word go going to be given? And what are the capabilities of spraying cities, et cetera, et cetera. You got to remember, we're dealing with lunatics, that there is no bounds to what they'll do to justify the ends of what they want to see in society. And
absolutely,
we're dealing with people that, you know, it's hard to think like these people, because, you know, they're psychopaths, and we consider ourselves to be fairly normal, rational people. You know, we have a heart. We love our children, want to see our families, want to see your friends do good, hate seeing people hurt, blah, 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 blah. You know, we consider ourselves to be normal human beings. It's what it means to be a human being. But these people are indoctrinated into a cult that glorifies dying for their cause, glorifies killing thousands of people, of non-believers, for their cause, et cetera, et cetera. And we're looking at what's being set up in Canada. Sure, we're not seeing the scale of attacks that we're seeing in Europe right now and the incidents.
There's a reason for that.
But that's also, there could be a reason for that. We could be, as Tom Quinton very, very eloquently puts, a staging ground for an attack on American
Absolutely.
State.
Absolutely.
You know, they don't want to poop in their own backyard. They want to keep that clean. So nobody up here.
There are so many criminal organizations and so many terrorist organizations operating out of Canada that has been for 35, 40 years now. And they all tell each other, there's that unwritten law. Don't you screw it up for everybody, because we'll put you down.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
they know how far they can push.
Exactly.
There's a reason. Like, for instance, Cuba. Cuba has an embargo with America. They can't get certain things from America because of the embargo, yeah? But they can come to Canada, set up a company, and deal with Cuba because we don't have that embargo. So they can now buy stuff from America, which they can now bring to Cuba. So, and it's like that, but on a much larger scale, because it goes into countries in the Middle East. It goes into all these other things where things like technology, medical, all these other things, they're double-edged swords. They're benefits and tools. They're also weapons. You know, ISIS Daesh had drones. You know, what do you think they got those drones? They weren't making them. They weren't doing these military drones. They were using commercial off-the-shelf drones like the Maverick Pro and all that other kind of stuff. The DJI Maverick or DJI drones that they could buy off the shelf. You know, to do those damaging things, and that's why they don't screw up Canada, because if they do, they'll get put down by their own folks. There's billions of dollars being funneled in technology and funding through these groups from Canada.
I know. It's scary. I really, really, well, I mean, I think in the next little while here, Gary, we're really going to see what kind of tenacity and what kind of fortitude there is inside the RCMP right now, because the reports that Tom Quiggin has demanded investigation into, the paper trails, I've been doing a little bit of looking into that, and the paper trails are very, very long and very wide, and the information is, as far as I can see, accurate. So the results of this RCMP investigation into what he's requested will really tell us exactly who's controlling the police in this country in the next period of time.
I spoke with several police officers in different agencies, specifically the RCMP, and nobody's going to come out and admit it and say it publicly, but there's a big splintering happening right now within the police. Those that are, I put on the uniform, I'll do what I'm told because that's my job.
Yeah.
As opposed to those that are saying, hold on a second,
something's wrong.
And they're helpless.
Gary, I got to share this with you too, buddy, because I play hockey with an RCMP. He's in there all the time. And over the course of the last couple months, you know, I'm not a kind of guy that really likes to talk to cops because cops are cops. But you know what? They are people. They're individuals. And conversations with this man, we've had a couple real good ones. And really, he told me, and this is right from his words, buddy, no word of a lie. He says most of the guys in his detachment are disgusted with what's going on in the upper level management of the RCMP. His words exactly. He says, I go to work, I put this uniform on, but I hate the job at this point because he sees, the thing is, this guy's got two kids. Yeah, I got to know the guy a little bit. And sure, they're cops, but they're people. They really are. And early in my life, I would stay right the hell away from talking to an RCMP. But, you know, I've had some real good conversations with this guy in the dressing room, on the ice. We've sat and chatted. And, you know, he hears where I'm coming from. He really does. And he sees it. And I think there's going to be a time come where you could see a major pushback upon members of the RCMP that see what's going on in the upper echelons, will mass together in a group and put a stop to it. And boy, I'll tell you, if 50 RCMP officers got together and all of a sudden went into Parliament and arrested Justin Trudeau for treason, which he should be done tomorrow, we'll see change in the country.
I don't have the faith that you do on that angle, because I've seen this happen in the States and in Canada over the last couple of years where they've replaced, and this is where the disconnect
that people have.
I hear you. No, what I'm saying is about the idea itself. You're more likely to see those 50 cops just say, you know what, we're done. That's what we've been seeing. And in the upper echelons, I mean, people have to understand there is a disconnect. There is a difference between the upper management of the RCMP and the RCMP officers. Like you said, the RCMP officers, they're just people. The people with a job that had a good, you know, this idea, they wanted to serve the community. And they're being dictated to by these guys who have been replaced by these leftist agenda seeking management people. And they did that in the American military. You saw, we just went through this, like when Obama was there, he literally fired. They gave him the management a litmus test and said, look, are you willing to fire on your own people, for instance? Mm-hmm. And if you mark no, you were let go and replaced. And we've done it here in Canada. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these people that will somehow have this idea that the RCMP is just going to buck the ranks, I can't see it, because what has happened traditionally is that they say, you know what, I'm done. Here's my badge. Here's my gun. And I'm going back to life.
Yeah. Or maybe I'm being a little optimistic in saying that maybe there's a couple of them out there that really do have a heart and really do give a hell about what's going on in our country. I'll tell you, if I was in that situation right now and was aware of what I am right now, I'd be seeking out and talking to fellow members, because there's power in numbers, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's something like that. Now, Gary, you know, that's a far-fetched thought, but we're getting into a situation in society now. The RCMP have to be aware of what's going on, and there's got to be enough of them out there with actual hearts that have families that really don't want to see coming what's coming, but are just doing what they're told to do and putting on the uniform that would amalgamate. And if you could get enough of those together, maybe there's an RCMP officer listening to this call. Well, we know the Canadian Secret Services and all those other guys, they're always monitoring our calls, but maybe there's an RCMP officer listening to me right now, and maybe this idea would resonate with them, because I'm telling you, 50 of them got together one day and walked into Parliament and said, we're making a serious a citizen's arrest with their uniforms on. There's either going to be shooting or they're going to arrest them. And the grounds for treason are there, my friend. You know it and I know it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think that if a whack of people went to Ottawa with those 50 RCMP and they all walked in and they were all live streaming, there's going to be no shooting. You know, nobody wants to be that guy that got caught on live stream globally shooting civilians.
Well, what do you think if the word got out that the RCMP were going to make a citizen or an arrest on Trudeau in Parliament, and that got out on social media for 2 hours prior to them going there, Gary, you would see tens of thousands of people swarming to the courthouse or to the House of Commons. And they'd be cheering and they'd be dancing in the street.
There's literally not enough police and military to stop that. And I think that if it came down to it, blue on blue, you'd see a lot more divide that say, you know what, I'm not doing it. You
know, anyway. It's a far-fetched scenario, we know.
I mean, they wouldn't participate in supporting Trudeau. I think they would actually stand aside and allow these guys to go and do their thing, you know. And I could hope. I hope that somebody is listening, you know what I mean? I hope that they use their – I hope that there's a cop out there that might actually resonate with this, because he knows. He looks at his family, looks at his kids, and sees the problems.
Say, Barry.
You know?
You want this future for your kids, even though you're doing your job?
Say, Barry.
Really, you got to sit and look yourself in the mirror. Well, yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
Somebody from London, somebody from over there across the pond wants to join in. Do you want to add in?
Oh, want to come in and add in? Sure. Welcome to join in the conversation.
All righty. All right.
Do I have a name?
I've heard his name before. You can ask him, but he goes by Reclaim the Law in the chat.
Graham.
No, it's not Graham. It's not Graham.
Sorry. Yeah, Nick can join in for a few minutes. He's a pretty knowledgeable guy when it comes to legal aspects of things. So, yeah, he's welcome to join. But, yeah, what were we talking about just a second ago, Gary? I got lost.
The idea that perhaps there might be somebody listening, perhaps in the law enforcement, that might resonate with the concept. You know, I think in the end, Canadians, including the RCMP and police, know that if the people do take back Canada, Trudeau and his ilk and people like him will be arrested. I mean, it is my absolute 100% goal to see him arrested for treason, have his assets, you know, seized like any other criminal, and ousted and make it so that all his people that contributed to this are held accountable, just like you and I.
Well, you know, when that does happen, Gary, you know, and I know it's going to be a lot of people go down. Because the tentacles are deep in our society now.
But that's the nature of politics today. It's this economic engine that you have to compromise your morals just to be a part of.
I understand that.
You know.
I understand
that. He's in now, Barry.
Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Barry. How are you?
Good. You wanted to add into this conversation, obviously, because you like what we're talking about. I know that.
Well, yeah. I mean, we were talking about citizens' arrest the other day, weren't we?
There was one other thing I was going to add to that conversation just prior to you coming in, Nick. And I'll only take a second here, but the one thing I've been putting to this cop is, you know, there is a rule of law in Canada. And what are the bounds and what are the legal aspects of actually doing a citizen's arrest if I have untangible, undeniable proof of treason being committed by our prime minister?
There's one barrier to all this. The way the law is set up in Canada right now is that the parliamentary people have protection from prosecution.
Right.
That's right.
Exactly.
That has to change.
It has to. Absolutely. Go ahead, Nick. I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but yeah, go ahead. If you want to talk about what we're talking about.
I thought there was a doctrine in English law for sure that no person is above the law. Although they say parliament is sovereign, they can't go and enact unlawful legislation.
But they do.
All the time.
Well, I'm an environmental campaigner, basically, and the threat of environmental damage is very real and is as serious as the threat of world war. And it is directly affecting every member of the armed forces in every country and the secret services of every country and the police force of every country and all their children right now. So we can pretty much immediately get all those numbers on our side, plus all the working people. I don't think we could lose if we just enact the common law.
Well, the problem that I see, especially in Canada, but it's also over there in Britain, I've watched your great country come to what it is today because of one thing. Well, a couple things, but one main thing, apathy. Mm. We've been lulled into this sense of apathy right across the West because we've tried to be better, tried to be more civil, tried to make it easier, tried to make it less difficult and inclusive so no child is left behind. And as a result, we've had two generations of this that has literally been nothing but little better than a bunch of fall downs, mm-hmm. you know. And they knew this. They fly. You know, you could go back in history and look at some of the conspiracy ideas, like the Communist Manifesto and all these other things. And they stated right there. I mean, stuff that, regardless of whether they're true or not, was written hundreds of years ago that said, all we got to do is attack the moral fiber. We attack the moral fiber, and they're done.
Yeah. Well, I agree to a point. But what's happened in the last 40 years, from my perspective, is that 40 years ago, when I started campaigning about the environment when I was a kid, people would say, what are you talking about? There's no problem. Now, if you can get someone to talk about it, they'll say, yes, there's a serious problem, but I can't do anything about it. I've got to pay my mortgage. Leave me alone. I'm taking enough Prozac already and my head hurts. You know, leave me alone. Right. So it's changed from there's no problem into there is a problem, but we can't do anything about it. Now, what I'm interested in, before anything's going to change, exactly what you're saying, is that state of mind has got to change from there's a problem, we can't do anything about it, into there's a problem, we can do something about it.
So how do you do that?
By informing people of the true nature of the real common law, which will overturn any legislation.
Hence the very nature of how synthesis came about.
Who came about?
Synthesis. The idea of what the project we're working on, synthesis, is about.
Okay, right, fair enough. But in the UK, we don't have GMOs, right? And that is because common law overturns legislation. And I've been making that point for 40 years, well, 30 of those 40 years. Reasonable, prudent, well-intentioned behavior is not criminal, despite any legislation.
Well, actually, genetically modified foods have been banned in many, many countries. The only place that's really being pushed hard is in North America still, and a few of the G7 countries. Go ahead, Nick.
Sure. I mean, it's been banned because protesters were going out and ripping up GM food and being prosecuted for it, arrested and prosecuted and found not guilty of a crime. And even if they were found guilty of a crime, the mitigation was such that their behaviour was found as reasonable. And they were fined £10 and told not to do it. And they'd go back and do it again next day. And then the same thing had happened again and again and again. And we stopped them right across Europe.
The power of the people's voice, man.
That's the power of numbers.
And exactly. The common law.
You know, the question I ask myself every day in Canada now, gentlemen, really is why are not Canadians standing up in mass? I see an awakening, and the one awakening I do see right now in Canada seems to be in the millennials. I've seen that in my own traffic on my sites. The people that I'm getting that are starting to look at my sites are young people, and that's encouraging. But
that's the Gen Z.
Huh?
That's Gen Z. That's not millennials. Millennials are your typical Antifa. They were ultra extreme liberals. Okay. Gen Z?
I'm using the wrong word. I'm talking about young people.
No. Yeah, young about people.
The people I'm seeing are 20, 27, 34 years old, 25 years old. And I'm seeing a lot of people going to the sites and starting to pay attention to that. So I'm seeing a wake up amongst the younger generation who've been asleep a long time.
And I think that's needed.
It's absolutely, absolutely. Because young people talk. You know, when one of them really starts to get educated and he sees the threats that are coming and understands the tools in his little toolbox that he can use to stop it, you'll see them rise up. And we need them more than anything. We've got to get them out of their game world controlled fallacy of a world. And that, to me, guys, I look at these games and these gaming systems and, boy, what a scourge on society. And that's what I'll call it. Because it's turned us, our children, into a generation of children that don't have social skills, that are just absolutely addicted to a fallacy. And
it's based on the common law, Barry.
Well, we're seeing the ripple down effect all through our society with children. We are. So many problems. And you said, you know, earlier, it's a very, very true statement. When you destroy the moral fiber of a society and you destroy the family unit, you will destroy that society, and that's where we see the focus of most of our attacks. Mark Dixon's actually trying to call in. Steve, can you give him a call? Because I can't answer this call.
Yeah.
You know, I look at people like Nick and I think, what would have things been like
today give me my number.
Had Nick had those same tools that these young guys have today? You know what I mean? To push his ideas with.
Give me my
get
number,
some games, Barry. Games based on common rule and morality. And get those out into, you know, some games that will appeal to those people and educate them about the common law and about this morality that we're talking about and the synthesis. You know, that's what we need. You could get games to do that quite easily. I just don't know any game architects. I wish.
There's tons out there.
I know, but I don't know any. I don't know how to get in touch with them. It's just very frustrating. I was on minds.com I didn't know. It nearly got somewhere, but didn't quite make it.
Yeah, they're kind of stuck on funding right now. They've got a big campaign to get some crowdfunding. Anytime you create a site or a platform like this, the biggest problem comes into, you know, the continued funding. Like when you look at something like Facebook that basically had $100 million start pool, you know what I mean? It's a constant thing. Now he's got billions from obvious places and obvious reasons. But with us, for instance, you know, it's just me trying to fund this thing. It doesn't work very well. It only goes so far. Minds had a good concept. They started to run with it. They're a little bit
Hello.
They're a little bit stuck because they're corporate based. You know what I mean? Their whole thing is corporate based versus ethical based. Well, not so much ethical based, but idealist based. So they're trying a business model to make business, right. And it makes a challenge. It brings up different challenges, different problems, right. and that's the way it goes. That's business, right?
So, hey, gentlemen, we've been joined by Mark Dixon. Mark is actually running for member of parliament under the National Citizens Alliance. For what writing, I'll let Mark tell you. But Mark's joined the show, and we're going to let Mark just have a couple minutes here. We want to talk about what's going on in South Africa, and he wanted to kind of bring that to your attention. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me. I think that it's wonderful that you're having this show and that you're reaching so many people. I would like to talk about South Africa. There's so much censorship in both North America and in Africa and South Africa in more particular. The South African government is led by President Ramaphosa, and he is very evil.
He is an evil opportunist.
He heads the African National Congress Party, the ruling party, and he has lied to the international leaders. He has misrepresented his government in getting all sorts of funding. For example, Canada last year, Trudeau gave about $18 million directly financial aid to the South African government. The people in South Africa have not received a penny of that. I believe that the government has just lined their corrupt pockets. The United States, the government gave, I think it was either 28 or 38 million, I may stand to be corrected on that, to the South African government. And that's just an example. There's other governments that have given money to South Africa. The people are being deceived and lied to. The people are being told by the government that all of the society's problems are as a result of the white people. They're blaming the white people when the white people have nothing to do with their problems. The South African government, their leaders, their civil servants, their members of parliament have beautiful homes, and the people are facing rationing, what they call they're rationing the hydro, and they call that shedding, but it's really rationing. There's so many problems in South Africa, but to get to the point, the white people, when I see videos, actual videos of people driving on the street, and then the black people surround the vehicle, stop them, grab the person, the driver, take them, beat them terribly. When I see graphic images of farm attacks and white people and their families are being tortured. And they're not just immediately killed. They're tortured in the most inhumane, despicable, vile, evil, satanic way. And the government is complicit because there's evidence showing that in the vast majority of these farm and rural attacks, cellular services were cut. They were jammed. And it's only basically, the militias, the government, the soldiers, the police that have the jamming devices. People can't call out for help. And there's growing evidence of this. There's also, the denial, by the government and authorities saying that, oh, well, these are just random acts of robbery. That's not true. In many instances, robbery was not the motive. It was to terrorize, torture in the most brutal, gruesome ways of the white people. There's now white ghettos where we as in society we would see 20 years ago, we'd see little pictures of little black Africans, you know, little Biafrans with swollen bellies. Now it's the reverse. It's little whites that are starving and white ghettos. People are being thrown out of their homes. People are losing their homes because they have affirmative action government programs for the government and in private industry. The private industry is now being told you have to have over 60% black minimum. And they're firing white people from jobs across all industries. And these people then lose their homes because of they can't pay their mortgages. They're not getting work. They don't have the welfare systems that we have there. And so what's happening is it's a very difficult situation. Most have the money to get out, never get out. Many have gone to Australia and other countries. World governments are just in denial, and Ramaphosa, the evil, vile, satanic president of the South African government, is lying to leaders, saying that we don't have a racial problem, we don't have discrimination, but yet Ramaphosa is being directly linked to evildoers. Malema is one of his henchmen. The government is we have a very terrible situation in South Africa, and the world needs to know that what's happening there. Well, there's so many problems. The government is also bringing in from neighboring countries thousands of people by busloads, and there's just so many problems. So many problems.
Well, we're going to do a show that on that, folks, in the next couple of weeks. Mark's going to line up some people in South Africa, and I'm going to help get the word out on that. So I look forward to doing that with you in the next couple of weeks, Mark. But let's switch gears here, because we've got about 18 minutes left in the show right now, and there's three really cool guys sitting in here with me right now. So I'd like to put a question out to you guys. I want your impact and thoughts on the United Nations global impact and what you see it doing to our world. And I want to get this spread around the table to get three or four different opinions on it here. And I'll start with Mark. What riding are you actually running for, Mark, again? Refresh my memory.
I'm planning to run for the Kanata-Carleton riding just outside of Ottawa in the Ottawa-Carleton area. Okay. It's currently there is a Liberal and she will be running again. And so I believe that due to the anti-Liberal sentiment, I think that it's a good chance to take her out politically. Oh.
Well, we are seeing a rise in conservatism. Okay, well, your thoughts first on this, and give you a couple minutes for your thoughts on the United Nations pact on mass immigration, Mark, and exactly what the implications are for us.
Well, first of all, the National Citizens Alliance is adamantly opposed to the UN involvement by Canada. We are opposed to the UN migration policies, and we are absolutely disgusted and appalled at the treasonous Prime Minister Trudeau signing on with the UN migration. The consequences of that is that although some are saying, well, it's not binding, but it's not binding yet, However, the very fact that the government and the leader, our prime minister, is regrettably going to be signing that UN migration agreement, it's going to have just horrific consequences for Canada. Canada will lose its sovereignty. Canada should have immigration, but at reasonable levels, and they have to be legal immigration, the proper way. Canada must stop the illegal border crossings that are coming in from, as you know, from the New York state in the in Roxdam, and it's costing Canada horrific sums of money to the taxpayers. This should not be happening. It's one thing that the Prime Minister has betrayed his own faith and was a Roman Catholic and became a Muslim, but he has no right to defile the office of the Prime Minister. He has no right to use the position that he's in to give hundreds of millions of dollars to Muslim associations, the Brotherhood of Muslim Associations, the International Brotherhood of Muslims. And this is wrong. He's betrayed Canada. Canadians are fed up. Canadians want a government that are going to put Canadians first. The National Citizens Alliance wants to put Canada first. We want to protect our culture. We are very patriotic to Canada. And so it's going to be Canadians must realize that having an open door where the UN decides how many come to Canada and from where, we lose our sovereignty, and it's totally unacceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. Gary.
Whoa. Where to begin? I'm going to try to keep it simple and take a more basic approach, because I have a lot to say about the UN and its mandates and its origins. I mean, the UN of today is not the UN of yesterday. It's been hijacked just like everything else in the West. But this is the problem. It doesn't matter about our allegiances to the UN or our involvement with the UN or our support of the UN or any of that, because nobody paid attention when it mattered to actually allow this to stop. This is what it is, and we have to accept it and try to find solutions for that. My thing is this, and it's always been, and it still is with virtually every stance I take. When you take away the right to choose from a person, you are now engaging in tyranny. And anybody that supports that, that's elected to represent us, but yet deny us that involvement, deny us our voice and our right to choose, is now the problem. Regardless of what the UN is doing, we have to fix our home. So this compact on migration is taking away your right to choose, your right to see where your money's going, your right to spend. You're going to be taxed more as a result of it. Your right to vocalize against that, any opposition. Your right to read any reporting, because it's now illegal for those bought and paid for newspapers to print anything in opposition or give anybody a voice through those platforms. So really what the migration compact is for me, it's a reminder that when I don't pay attention, I get the government of their choosing. I get the government that takes away my rights. I get the government that really doesn't care about me. And that's what the migration compact is going to do. And every Canadian will be impacted by this. Your color, your creed, your faith, your religion, your political leanings, your economic standings, none of it's going to matter. You will be impacted by this compact, binding or not.
It's absolutely appalling. Nick, have you been following this a lot or a little? Or do you know anything about it? Do you want to voice an opinion on this, my friend?
I have an opinion, and I can put it into about four words. It's incitement to civil war. That migration policy. The migration policy is incitement to civil war, or otherwise known as autogenocide, where you get a population to kill itself. They want different. This country, we've had 40 years of certain elements of Muslims. I'm not anti-Muslim, I'm not anti-Islam, but some people who have been following that cult religion have been systematically gang raping young girls in this country, and it's been reported and reported and reported and investigated by police and stopped and stopped and stopped as soon as it gets to above the level of inspector for 40 years. And that has been done deliberately by someone. Now, who would do that? This country has been controlled by basically the Rothschilds since the Battle of Waterloo. We've had it longest out of all the countries. America's had it since, USA has had it since the Federal Reserve was in 1912 or whenever it was. I don't know what time Canada got usurped, but we've been usurped already a long time ago. And they want us all fighting each other. This is, you know, call me a conspiracy theorist, but they want civil war everywhere. They want us all killing each other. It will save them the bother. You know, talking about population reduction, you know, if they can get us to all kill each other, it will save them the bother. And not only that, but all the fittest and strongest and bravest and most patriotic people of all sides of every war are all the ones that die. What better for a bunch of lazy fat bankers who've never done a day's work on their life and couldn't take a fight, couldn't even punch their way out of a paper bag? Sorry, I'm angry about this. It's directly incitement to civil war. That's what I see it. That's how I see it.
Well, really well said, Nick, and I agree with you 100%. You know, when I sit back and I look at everything that's going on right now in societies around the world, societies are being pushed to the point where citizens are at a state of armed resistance, of getting to the point of armed resistance against their government. We see it happening now in France. We see the pushback by Macron and his commies. We're seeing other uprisings now in Europe, and we're seeing a rise in conservatism and nationalism that is really starting to sweep the planet. We're starting to see it in Canada in droves now. People are becoming aware of the agenda that's being played out. But it's really accelerating, and we're really going to have some interesting times coming ahead with the attack on free speech. What we're seeing in Canada is complete control of all media by the government. Complete control. And that, my friends, is a page out of the Mein Kampf, and it also plays right into the Marxist textbook of how to turn a society into a socialist shithole. Excuse my language. Poop hole. I shouldn't have said that word. Excuse me. But that's where we're going.
Naughty, naughty.
Yeah. I try not to say that word, but that's where they're taking us. And unfortunately, a lot of society has just got the nose right through the ring, and it's just going, okay, take us there. We trust you guys. You wouldn't do anything wrong.
It's funny.
We find ourselves in interesting times right now, guys. We really do.
I don't mean to poke in, but it's really amazing. I've never met this guy, Nick, before. I've never talked to him before. You don't know me, do you, Nick?
No, sir.
And it's amazing because you've been resonating exactly what I've been saying to Barry and others for so long. It's been this last 40 years, you know, you actually use that same number. And you say that it's to incite civil riots and civil war. And I've been saying the same thing. They can't just pull off another Tiananmen Square. They can't just pull off a mass genocide anymore because the people are awoke to that. So they got to get us to do it. And they're doing a good job of it.
Say, Barry,
you even look at the conservative moment.
Barry,
look at the conservative movement in Canada, just as an example, because it's being repeated everywhere else. But we do it to ourselves. I mean, you look on social media, and imagine if all those people were in the same room.
Yes.
Speaking the same way.
Say, Barry.
You know?
Barry.
Yep.
You might as well run over because we got another caller in here, too.
Oh, do you guys want to hang in for a little while? I'm down, man. I drank my coffee. I've still got caffeine running through my veins, and I'm loving the conversation. So, yeah.
Welcome to the show, Dermot.
We're going to get everybody a chance to talk here, guys. Let's everybody kind of – if we're getting a lot of people in here, let's just have some short thoughts on issues and pass it around, okay?
Barry, meet Dermot.
Yes.
Hi. It's Dermot from Ireland, Dublin.
Oh, how you doing? Welcome to the show. Yeah. What do you think?
Great show. Basically, I have lived in France, and I would sum up the situation in France as very simple. I identified it in 1997 that the structure of the French system was basically communist with a bit of capitalism on top. So kind of like stealth communism. Mm-hmm. And as long as Germany kept pumping the money in to cover the gaps because communism doesn't work, it could go for as long as that. But once, because the wall fell down, the only thing that keeps the French working is, because 60% of the people work for the state, is they get the pension. But now what's happened is what I forecast would happen is the pensions would not be enough for them to live on. And then once that happened, that would light the fuse. And that's what's happening is basically you're seeing the fall of communism like you would see the fall of communism in Russia. The only difference is with Lisbon Treaty, it's allowable to bring in any army or police from any other part of Europe to protect any part of Europe that is having a problem. not only that, but the Lisbon Treaty allows, it says there's no death penalty except for fighting a terrorist or you're rioting. So they can bring in EU police and EU army, and they can legitimately shoot on the rioters. But that's only part of the story. The big story is this migration pact. Its plan is to bring in 60 million, so probably more, but that's what they say, 60 million migrants. Now, it's a fact. It's a, you know, whenever you look in history, whenever the population match or exceed or thereabouts the locals, there's always a civil war. So they know this by bringing in a large amount of migrants. In the case of the Muslims, you very often will get the civil war much sooner. You know, you don't have to wait till 50%, you know, 50-50. And the Muslims will normally start attacking every single day because of their cult and the fact that they stay there. Everywhere they go, they must conquer and turn into an Islamic state. And so that's why they particularly want to bring in North Africa. They don't want to bring in so much Middle Africa or Southern Africa. They want to bring in Northern Africa because it's predominantly Muslim. And they want to bring in Middle East or Pakistan. Not quite so much India because the Indians are Hindu and, you know, they don't always like Christians, but they're not in the same league as Muslims, which don't want to tolerate any other religion except Muslim. Mm. So this is, as the other speaker was saying, it is a formula for making a civil war to get everybody fighting everybody so that the globalists can run around the place. Now, the next phase is when the civil war breaks out in Europe, which it will by 2025 probably, then they'll bring in the United Nations troops, which will be a peace enforcement. And they'll probably be United Nations troops from Indonesia and Pakistan and places like that, predominantly Muslim, who will be told, you are to shoot the locals in Europe and not to shoot the migrants. And then basically gradually exterminate all the people, the 500 million who live in Europe. And that's what the globalists are doing. Canada and America is slightly different because you're going to get the invasion from South America. It's a different ball game, but they're going to try something along the same lines. But that's the European situation summed up as quickly as I can say it. I don't know how that's good to sound with you.
Oh, no, that was good. Good input, my friend. And a lot of things you said, I absolutely agree with. You know, it's not just here we're seeing it. We're seeing it everywhere. And it's all part of an orchestrated attack on Western culture, Western civilization. Mark, I'm going to let you have a few minutes here. You haven't heard from me for a few minutes. What do you think? What are the solutions?
Well, the politically, what we have to do is we have to basically have a temporary pause in immigration in Canada. We need to, first of all, immediately deport all illegals, deport them. Mm-hmm. We need to declare Sharia law as being hate speech and put it under the criminal code. That, by the way, talk about censorship. My own website for political reasons was taken down because I've asked for Sharia law to be included as hate speech. So even politicians or people who are running for politics are being censored. I believe that, Canada needs to look and learn from what's happening in Europe. Europe is having terrible problems with the Islamic invasion. The UN is behind it. And we have to – I don't hate Muslims. I don't hate Islam. I will not accept Sharia law. I denounce Sharia law. Not all Muslims are bad. There are many are good, but those ones, by their faith, will remain silent when your radical, fanatical jihadists take control. And that's the problem. So we have to really look at – Canada must retain democracy retain freedom of speech. Canada must retain a freedom of peaceful assembly. Canada must insist politically that anyone coming into Canada, they must accept our values and society the way it is and not want to change it. Otherwise, we just close our door.
Barry? Somebody? I don't know what happened to him there.
Hello? I went and cut myself out by mistake.
I'm sorry. I had my microphone muted, guys. My apologies. So did I can't remember that I mute out when people are talking so you don't pick up the background noise. You
know? But there's a question in chat for you, Barry.
Well, Graham's asking a question. Ask Graham if he could join for a minute to ask that question because I have a hard time repeating that kind of a question on the air. Is Graham in here right now?
No, he's not in here, but if he wants to come
in. He said he'd join in for a minute, so maybe you could let him in for a minute. He wants to ask a question. I'd rather let him ask the question directly, if that's possible. Take a second out of the show or a minute out of the show or whatever. In the meantime, yeah, Mark, I agree exactly with what you're saying. Like I said, we're seeing the same agenda being played out all over the world right now. We're going to be looking at an immigration problem coming from South America because once they get into the United States, they're beelining for Canada because of the big carrot that Justin Trudeau has put out there for them. Who wouldn't want to come to Canada, get free health care, free dental, get children paid for, blah, 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 coming from a situation that they're coming from. And, you know, the same agenda, it doesn't matter where you look at being played out. I'm going to let Nick chime in for a minute, or Gary, you can chime in for a minute. What do you think?
You go, Gary.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I got to throw a log in the fire anyway, so why don't you go, Nick, and then I'll go after you.
All right. I was just going to bring in the subject of Q, because it hasn't been mentioned so far this evening, and I think Q and Trump and the Q army and what's going on is absolutely incredible. And I think it could be an answer to all these problems. You know, borders, the banks, the media, you know, he's said two quite extraordinary things that no one said before. He said the media is the greatest enemy of the American people and the banks are, the Federal Reserve Bank. You know, he also brought in an executive order which takes effect on January the 1st, I believe, where they can use military tribunals for civilians who are up for treason. Another executive order which... we have in this country an act of parliament called the Proceeds of Crime Act, where the proceeds of crime are recoverable. And if the Federal Reserve System, which is fractional reserve banking, is a fraud, which is a crime, and the proceeds of crime are recoverable, then the proceeds of the crime of fractional reserve banking, which is all the interest of all the money that the banks have created out of nothing, which is their entire wealth, is all recoverable through the courts. And Trump has brought in an executive order saying that they can immediately take the proceeds of any human abuse. Well, enslaving the entire population of the planet into jobs which they have to destroy the planet and financing both sides of every war, and then not to mention child abuse and sacrifice and all the other things they're up to, you know, all their proceeds are recoverable straight away immediately on January the 1st. So I think I'm really quite excited about what's going on with Q. I don't know, has anyone else had any experience or been watching the Q phenomena, because it is quite a phenomena. Is anyone else watching?
Yeah, I've been paying attention, and although I love the rhetoric being shared with the Q movement, I really question the outcome, because to be able to do the things they're talking about would literally throw the world into instant chaos. You're talking about not just the individuals, but the system itself. And it does need to be done, but there's nobody, Trump included, that really has a mass interest of committing social or economic or political suicide like that, you know. And with Trump, although he may not be politically motivated so much, I'm not sure that he cares if he gets elected or not. He wants to, but I know that that's not his main thing, right? The problem is his very foundation of his life is on business, which is tied into that organization that he's going to try to down. So I don't see it. I see a similar concept, but when you reach so high and then you kind of fall short, most people say, well, at least we got Clinton, or at least we got Obama, or at least we got, you know, a little bit. And they accept that. And I think that this is something that's part of the bigger overall. Like we've talked about some of the things like the immigration and these other issues, and it really does all tie into each other as a direction and a fail-safe setup in case the Maine doesn't work as well as they want or all these other things. Canada's solution, speaking as a Canadian, is very simple. We just reclaim our direction. We reclaim our sovereign rights, similar to what some other nations are doing. We introduce proper legislation, including recall legislation, that allows us to correct the mistakes and make sure it doesn't happen. You know, and once we do those basic things, we introduce things like castle law, but a more proper version of it, similar to what the Americans utilize. You know, the Americans were never invaded for a big reason. Well, a couple reasons, but one big reason, the Japanese said, you know, if we do, there's going to be a gun behind every blade of grass. You know, if people were allowed to legally defend themselves, we wouldn't be worried about half the stuff we're worried about. You know, you can bring in 100 million Muslims, and it wouldn't matter because there will be accountability from the people themselves. The politicians couldn't commit the crimes because there would be accountability from the people themselves. So
I don't agree that it has to form, has to go into chaos. I would see a way forward in common law.
Well, I agree with that. I don't advocate. And if you get to know me and you hear the things that I discuss, I'm the absolute
someone unmuted that's making a noise with a crackling noise.
Barry's eating. He's eating some chips. He's got the munchies. So, but I know it's Barry.
How'd you know that, man?
Dude, I know. And
sorry. That was good.
You know, the thing is that
you're a psychic.
I am the absolute last person that condones violence as a measure of change. Barry knows it. Mark knows it. Other people that have spoken to me know this. In fact, I'm very vocal against those that push that as an answer, especially when they push it online as an answer without having the courage to follow through themselves. I'm not the guy that's saying to use violence at all, but I know that when the playing field is level, people use a little bit more common sense.
No, I didn't get that you were advocating violence. I just got that you were saying that if we took all the money off the banks, the world would descend into chaos. And I was
it would.
Saying,
absolutely.
I don't agree. I
we have nothing set up en masse.
We don't
fill
need
that
to.
Gap.
We don't
we do,
need to
because people are so dependent upon that system.
We don't need to fill the gap, sir. We need to take the money off them and use that same money to pay people to create a beautiful place.
Absolutely. Absolutely, 100%.
An organized way forward, which doesn't descend into chaos. You take the money off the banks, put it in the public purse, and use it to pay people to create a beautiful place to live.
Which is socialism, and I'm not cool with that either.
Not at all. I can see a mixed economy where you can have socialism, capitalism, communism, anarchy, all thriving together, as they have in Cuba, as it goes.
That's not how Cuba works, though. I know Cuba. That's not how they're doing it.
Well, if you're in Cuba, as far as I understand, I've never been there, so I don't know firsthand, but as far as I know, that you're allowed to have a piece of land in Cuba, and you can join one of three different schemes, one of which is a state-run farm where you just go along and work on it, one of which is a cooperative where you cooperate with other people, which is, so far I've described communism, socialism, and the other one is where you have your own bit of land and do your own thing, which is more or less capitalism. And those
you don't get that option. I went to go and open a bar in Cuba a few years ago, and right off the jump, I had to accept that the government would own at least 51% or better. They would build it, they would staff it, I would run it, they would stock it, and they would get that not just control, but cut economically right off the jump.
Does that apply to farms as well?
Because that applies to literally every endeavor you could possibly do.
Well, it doesn't have to be like that. I mean,
we could have unicorns and rainbows every day too, but that's probably likely not going to happen either.
We could have a lot of things. My point is that
we've
got a blank slate, right? We've got all the money in the world at our disposal, theoretically, on January the 1st, just say, right? Or on Sunday, when the banks are brought down and their money's taken off them, their assets are stripped and they're put in Gitmo for the rest of their lives for child abuse, genocide, and whatever else crimes they've committed, right? We've now got a blank slate. We can do what we like. So let's invoke the common law that you can do whatever you like as long as you do no harm. That's the first principle. We ban usury, which is taking half of everybody's working life, paying interest to the banks, right? And then we've got plenty of time to sit down and discuss what we're going to do with our technology.
But we don't. That's the thing that people like you pushing this concept don't understand. We don't have time. The minute
saying if we ban usury, we would have time because 50% of everybody's.
Do you understand why? Do you understand why America split from you guys?
Yes, I know exactly
because
why.
Because of these concepts.
Because the bankers were forcing the British Empire, the king, to pay interest on the loans of money that we'd borrowed off them to fight the Napoleonic Wars. And they were charging that interest to the American people, and the American people rebelled against it. And were shortly then financed by the same bankers. We have to now have control of America.
If you really want to bring about change, one of the biggest things you can do is vote with your dollar. You don't need to go through all this horse and dog and pony show to get to that. If I don't like Trudeau, I won't go buy gas at Petro-Canada. I won't buy from any corporation that is tied to Petro-Canada or tied to Trudeau.
That takes effort, that takes responsibility. It's acting in my interest.
I agree with you 100%.
I don't vote. And 60% of the people aren't voting, and that in and of itself means that... It's not the problem. The problem is the people... you have an opinion, I have an opinion. We're not going to agree on that.
That's right.
The problem is people are voting for idiots. That is the problem.
The problem is
people are voting for liars. They know they're liars.
We stopped voting for policy for the last 40 years. And we now vote personality. Do you honestly believe that in America, a Clinton, Donald Trump would have ever been a thing? Ever. They would have been tarred and feathered and ran out of town. We would never have a Justin Trudeau on the ticket.
Trump is a different cat of fish entirely.
He is, but he would have never been on the ticket 40 years ago.
We don't know that.
Of course we do. Ever in history, there's never been another president like Trump.
He's one person I would actually vote for. Now, I wouldn't have voted for him at the time because I didn't know enough about him. But now I know more about him and what he's up to from the Q perspective, which is proven again and again and again. The proofs are that Q is high level military intelligence, the highest level. You know, there's no question about that. It's been proven again and again and again. Right? Without that insight, I wouldn't even entertain even talking about Trump. Because he appears like a buffoon, but he's not. He's a very clever man.
Yeah, but there's never been in the history of America ever been any person for president running or winning like Trump. He is a personality, and the people voted that personality. They didn't vote Trump because of his policies. They didn't know his policies. What they knew was he was giving the finger to the established existing politicians in place. He was giving the finger to the people around him and saying, I'm going to run. And I'm going to make America great. And that's what people want to hear. And he got it. And he won. And he's doing a good job. But he's still a personality.
Yeah, but like him or leave him, man, a lot of the promises he made in his election campaign, he has fulfilled, okay?
He will go down as the only president in history.
Every single one.
I'm going to let Mark interject his thought into this conversation about Trump. And the other gentleman that's joined the conversation, I'm going to let him interject his thought, and then I'm going to interject mine. And then we're going to shut it down because I can't go too much longer. I've got other things I'm going to do. I've got my family coming up tonight, so I'm going to cook dinner for him.
Dermot had to leave.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Mark, what are your thoughts on Donald J. Trump?
Well, first of all, I supported him. I believed in him before he was the president. I was absolutely ecstatically pleased that he became the president. I believe that most conservative-minded individuals in Canada love and admire Donald J. Trump. I think that it's good timing to have Donald J. Trump. And the type of person that he is, he's a successful businessman. That's what government needs. He wants to run the government as an accountable machine, and he wants it to be spendthrift, and he wants to run it as if it was a private business and run it for a profit, that type of mentality. I really hope and pray that he'll have not one but two successful terms in office, and I just adore really basically everything he's doing. And may I comment on another subject going back to Canadian politics? if I may say, I believe, and it has been touched upon by the one of your other speakers, and all of your speakers are very well spoken and articulate, and it has been a pleasure hearing them. I would like to say that what Canada needs to do, the people of Canada need to, in 2019, every single person who is going to vote, they need to ask their those who are running for office, will you or will you not support recall legislation? We are the only political party, the National Citizens Alliance, that are saying we must and will have an accountable government for the people.
Right.
We need a government. We need a government that at any time, if we step out of line, you can throw us out in midterm. The problem that we have in our current democracy, the electorate only has democracy for one day every 4 years. And actually, it's not even for a full day because the polls are open from 9 to 9. So for 12 hours. The thing is that this is unacceptable. You could have a government destroying your nation, putting your nation in debt for not one, but three more generations in just one term of office. And this is unacceptable. Recall legislation means this. If in every single constituency or any constituency at any point during the term of government, every single citizen who was qualified to vote and they had voted during the election, they may write to the Elections Canada and say, this is my name. I'm an eligible voter. I voted in the last election. I oppose my current MP, and I want that MP replaced. That would be kept on file with Elections Canada. And if 51% of that constituency at any point write, and it would be law, 51% stated that they wanted recall, it's mandatory within 60 days to have a by-election in that constituency. It would be law. And this, if we have this for every constituency throughout Canada, we have only 338 MPs and 338 constituencies. So what we need is, let's not aside whichever political party, whoever is running, whatever party's running, people have got to demand that the Canadian government and constitution have recall legislation that empowers the people and requires accountability from government, that guarantees accountability throughout the term, so that at any point the people can force those whether it's him or her as MP collectively or individually out. And that is that would be true democracy, true, really, to me, proportional representation of the people. The people will be empowered, and you're going to have the government fearing the people, not currently now where the people are fearing the government. And that is what the National Citizens Alliance firmly want. We as the National Citizens Alliance, if we were to form government, we will promise that, and it will be delivered. One thing about Mark Dixon, I can say politically, I will make few promises, but what promises I make, I will keep. As a matter of fact, as a candidate, I am saying to the electorate in Kanata Carlton that if you vote for me, from day one, I will produce and I will give a return back to you, the constituents, because every single paycheck that I receive as an elected member of parliament every single month for my full term of office, 25% of it will be given to a blind trust within the borders and wall of the constituency to be used to help the poor, the suffering, and charitable organizations within the borders of that constituency. And that's where my heart is. So I will be immediately every month, every paycheck, MPs are all paid once a month. Every single month, I will be giving back to the people who had elected me, and not to some national charitable organization. They didn't elect me, but the people within the borders of my constituency. I don't decide where that money goes. I just hand it over to them. It would be volunteers, businessmen, volunteers within who are chosen by the constituents. They will decide who and what and how much the people get. That is where my heart is. Secondly, I will then work to really serve the people. And I don't mind working a 12 or 14 hour day. And primarily my purpose is I'm 62. I want to spend my final chapter of life giving back to Canada. Canada has been good to me. Ontario has been good to me. I can think of no other better way than to get elected and dedicate my remaining years of my life back to truly giving back to Canada and putting my money where my mouth is.
Well, thanks, Mark. Great thoughts, buddy. What a great concept. Let's get all the politicians to be able to say something like that. Not too many people would say that, Mark, so God bless you for saying that, my friend. And let's pass it on. Who's next here?
Can I just say one quick thing before you pass it on, please?
Sure, Mark.
An NCA government, and I personally believe very strongly and unwaveringly, I will believe that in gun rights, I strongly believe that if you have a nation like in Switzerland, where virtually every family, every household has at least a rifle, that's why
Hitler
attacked Switzerland. Yeah. Canada needs to have strong gun rights. What happened in Toronto would not have had the fatalities and injuries if the public or a portion of the public were carrying. I believe you should have the right to carry for those people who are sane, those people who are law abiding, who don't have a criminal record. If they want to carry a gun for their personal protection, they may do so. Now, let's give an example for a moment quickly here. If you have that shooter that goes into in Danforth Avenue in Toronto, which we all heard about, he then fires one, maybe killing two, but before he could attack another 12, which he did, and injure them seriously, people that were armed would have taken him out. Now, that's the benefit of having an armed public. Now, not everyone has to be armed, but I'm saying that if you have a portion of people who are armed, they will react. They will defend one another. They will stop terrorism. And the problem is we've got too many gun controls. What we need, and if you look at in the states, in the individual states within that union, they have the lowest crime when they have the most liberal gun laws. And the National Citizens Alliance will guarantee that we will promote gun rights for the same law-abiding citizens. And I just wanted to say that.
I'm going to vote for you guys. I'm voting for you guys. great point, Mark. Really great point. And well taken. Okay, listen, I'm only going to be in here for a few more minutes, guys, because I do have family coming at 5 o'clock, which is an hour and a half, and I got to get cooking my dinner here. I'm going to let Nick say a couple things and Gary say a couple last things, and then I'm going to shut the show out for the week. We've gone over half an hour now, almost. Nick.
Yeah.
Last thoughts.
Okay, on the recall legislation, I think you're talking about recalling politicians who are misbehaving. I totally agree with that. I think that can be done quite well. Someone in the chat in People's Internet Radio said, how can a common law advocate, which I am, be in favour of legislation? Well, there is such a thing as legislation which is lawful, right? I mean, like the Criminal Justice Act in UK, very quickly, if you damage or destroy another person's property without a lawful excuse, you commit a crime of criminal damage to that person's property. The question arises, what is a lawful excuse to damage or destroy another person's property? For example, I use would be if a house is on fire and you kick the door down to get someone out. It is illegal, in other words, it's against the legislation to kick someone's door down, but it's lawful to do it in that circumstance. And because that piece of legislation, damage or destroy another person's property without a lawful excuse, because it includes the bit about the lawful excuse, it is a lawful piece of legislation, in my opinion. That's it. I'll stop. I could go on for hours. You know that, Barry.
Good thoughts.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing to have that, though. The thing is, look, I don't mind smashing a car window. If I see a dog in the middle of the summer and it's about to die from heat exhaustion, smashing that window to get that dog out. Then a case like that, you have to, you know, Well, it was well said what you said.
Okay, great. And you know what, Gary, I'm going to let you have a thought now because I am going to, like I said, shut this out. And Nick, always a pleasure having you on, my friend. And Mark, thanks for joining today.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Well, it was nice hearing from Mark, and it was nice meeting and hearing from Nick and the Irishman that disappeared. I'm going to end my thoughts with this. I hope you have a good dinner, and don't burn that up. You enjoy your evening with your family. Even though you spoiled your dinner with your munchies, I think that it should be a good evening.
Pistachios, yeah, buddy. Pistachios, okay?
I can hear it the whole time. I can.
Sorry, buddy.
Oh, no, no, don't.
I thought I was muted out.
let's put it this way. If I had pistachios, I'd be eating them right now, too. And I don't even have the munchies. I just like pistachios. We got a lot of work around the world in the West, you know, from England to Germany and everywhere in between to Canada and the States. And the thing that resonates with me the most is something that the Americans really, really put forth through their founding fathers. And they said, look, here's the framework. Here's the car. Now you guys drive it, but you also got to maintain it because it will break. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that work, you can't pitch and complain. You know what I mean? You can't whine about the outcome when you didn't fix it. You knew it and you chose to ignore it. And that's where we're at today that we need to get back to. We need to start fixing that engine and getting it running right again. And I think we can. I think there's enough people that are really honestly fed up that are taking time to learn, taking the time to think, taking the time to revisit history for comparisons. And we will get there. We just can't give up. We just got to keep moving forward.
Great thoughts,
guys. May I make a little comment? I just want to say for everyone listening to this, the National Citizens Alliance, the political party, we believe and will be promised to be fiscally responsible, which means we as a political party will operate within the government budget. We will not incur additional debt to burden generations or the people. We will operate within existing revenues.
Good point. I urge people to go look at the platform of the National Citizens Alliance and see if it resonates with you. A lot of things they say really resonate with me, and we need other voices in Canada to be heard at this point. So thanks for joining us, Mark. And thanks, Gary, for joining us, and thanks, Nick, for joining. It's been a very, very pleasurable hour and a half talking with you gentlemen, and I look forward to more conversations in the future. Great points on a lot of different thoughts today, guys. We got full spectrum. The first hour with Roger was awesome. I really enjoyed talking with Roger and the points he brings forward and gets people thinking in a lot of different directions. And we kind of carried on with that same direction this afternoon. It's all really, when you look at it, it's all tied together. We're in a bit of a world of hurt right now, but the solutions are there. And I think it's our responsibility. I know it's our responsibility to embrace the solutions right now, or our children are truly going to curse us. And I say that many times, and I honestly believe it. So now's the time to get involved, guys.
It's called civic duty.
Great show, guys. I'll be back. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for producing my show, Steve Roberts. Thank you for PIR for providing this platform to share our thoughts. And I'll be back next week, same time, same place. Have a great week, guys, and God bless you all. Bye for now.
Stay safe, folks.